From the Jackalope Studios, high above the city in the beautiful Berry View Castle, welcome to the Harmony Health Hour, reconnecting spirit, mind, and body, with your host, Dr. Daryl Drumright. You're not the only one I've ever had, and if I say I want to set you free,
hey everybody, this is Dr. Drumright, the Harmony Health Hour, coming at you for Jackalope Radio. We're going to hit a number of topics tonight. Man, has it been busy around here. We had the mother of all storms come across North America this week. While it was dumping a foot of snow on us, it was dumping 3 inches of ice in Indianapolis and put another foot and a half of snow and trapped people in Chicago, Boston, New York, all across the place. Strangest thing, it happened all at once, though. Not here, then there. This storm was 2,000 miles across. I mean, what is up with that? I never seen nothing like that before. So all you guys snowed in out there, and once again to our Australian friends out there still cleaning up the mud and muck, we send our warm blessings out to everybody out there, and we're going to talk about a couple things tonight. We're going to hit a couple chapters of the Tao Te Ching, and then we're going to hit on a little lecture I have on the difference between viruses and bacteria, so how you can at home tell the difference from whether your kid's got a viral cold or a bacterial problem, which is a very important thing to know the difference in. And then we'll spend some time, some new NASA discoveries that I don't know if you've heard about yet. Maybe Todd will be like that topic. And if we have time, we're going to get into a little current events with the medical legal realm and keep carrying on from there. And this is Dr. Drumright again. So let's start off with verse number 42 of the Tao Te Ching. Verse number 42, the principles of transformation. The great integrity expresses one. One manifests as two. Two is transformed into three. And three generates all the myriad entities of the universe. Every entity always returns to yin after engaging yang. The fusion of these two opposites births the vital energy that sustains the harmony of life. But for most people, this harmony is decimated by inheriting a condition of relative misery, scarcity, and victimization. Politicians cleverly pretend that they too originate from the toxic soil of this misery, even while designing their very laws that legislate victimization, legitimate victimization. But watch out, those who hoard over sufficiency will be diminished, and those who are diminished will become bountiful. Those commonly known truths that common people teach each other are also my truths. As you sow, so shall you reap. Such is the heart of my teaching in a world forced to live heartlessly. This verse summarizes the origin and theory of the great integrity, Tao, and in its practice, Te, its violations and the teachings that can function as guides, Ching, to return to us to a holistic and integral life, Tao. The evolution of the great integrity is summarized in the first short stanza, which encapsulates the intuitive wisdom of the ancients and which is now validated by the latest scientific theories. Specifically, this evolution is postulated as being rooted in the great underlying truth of the universe as expressing the metaphor of one. We can now, in the 21st century, translate that metaphor as a recognition that every entity in the universe is related to and inherent in every other part. In the early 1970s, I discovered that the ancient Chinese vital energy, qi, system of acupoints and channels is reiterated in each part of our body, and furthermore, that each of these anatomical parts manifests acupoints to the rest of the body that are hologramic to the anatomy of the body. I called these microacupuncture systems. Carl Pribram discovered that the brain was also a holonomic, and that each part of the brain contained the knowledge of the whole brain. Microbiologists have discovered that in every single cell of every human organism, the sum total of the whole life experience of every living organism since the beginning of time is preserved. David Bohm, a colleague of Albert Einstein, applied the holonomic concept to the nature of an entire universe. All of these investigations translate Lao Tzu's intuitive concept of the great integrity in scientific terms. The great integrity manifests as two through the universality of opposites, passive and active, cold and hot, wet and dry, slow and fast, low and high, slow and fast, negative and positive, all of which are categorized by the ancient Chinese yin and yang. Since the time of Hegel, 1770 to 1831, sorry if I don't get these names right, modern dialectics have shown how the two is transformed into three. Hegel reveals how everything in the universe is always involved in transformation, and that every process involved involves the conflict of opposites, yin and yang, thesis and antithesis, which resolves into a third entity, synthesis. This verse also reminds us how the great integrity has been violated by human beings and civilizations who disturb the natural harmony that nature continually reestablishes in its transformational processes. Lastly, Lao Tzu tells us that it is common truths that common people teach each other, which are also his truths, through which we will return once again to the great integrity and end our heartless ways of life. Buried in all that information is a couple of references to some of the modern understanding of the brain as a holograph. When I teach pain theory to my patients, one of the first things I teach them is that when I pinch your hand, you don't feel it in your hand. I could put a tourniquet around your arm, and when I do that, in about 5 minutes, I could cut your hand off with a dull butter knife, and you wouldn't feel a thing. So when I pinch it, there's no damage to the tissue, yet in your consciousness, you feel a sensation of pain. See, pain is an electrical signal from the cell population, which is a reflection of the energetic body, into the holograph that's in the dark room inside your head. And from that holograph, you interpret reality and set your path for the future. This is observed throughout the time space, throughout the universe, and we try to find the unified field theory that would explain subatomic particles and quantum physics, along with astral space, stars, planets, and stuff like that, so that they all work from the same, Lao Tzu would call great integrity. Verse number 43, the value of minimums. That which is most tender can overcome that which is most rigid. That which has least substance can penetrate that which has least space. Acting without deliberate action and teaching without uttering a word are rarely practiced, so few find their way to the great integrity. Commentary. Most of us become addicted to maximums. Maximum possessions, maximum power, maximum praise, and maximum leisure. Although they are toxic, they function as compulsive compensations for our inability to fulfill our human needs. Lao Tzu sings the praises of minimums, inviting us to appreciate their higher value. Nevertheless, he never expresses blame or guilt when we choose the maximums instead. He only observes that most of us are by and large making poor choices. He probably sensed that higher alternative values cannot resonate widely until we all grow up in families and communities that nurture these values. I think what Lao Tzu is trying to say in this verse is that understanding that the universe is one and you are a part of the universe, to try to put your ego over the top of it and make yourself the overpowering center or the control mechanism within it is an error in your ways. And that he also goes on and expresses that you'll grow up someday, you'll realize. And, you know, as I'm closing in on my 50th year, I can honestly say that what I thought I knew 10 years ago and what I think I know now are different things. And I look forward to 10 years from now to look back at what I thought I knew now compared to what I think I know then. I love this stuff, deep thinking stuff. My kids are learning how to play chess at home. I have a $20 bill sitting under the chessboard. The first one that beats me gets the $20. So I go home tonight and I get greeted by my sons, 7 and 9 years old, with a challenge to the chessboard. I have to limit them each to 2 games apiece, or else I'll be there all night because they want that $20. They've already got plans for what they're going to do with it. I promise to play my heart out, and I hope it'll be a couple years before that $20 leaves that chessboard. I love playing with the kids. So speaking of the kids, the next topic we're going to get into here in a few minutes is about viruses versus bacteria, because to the best of my ability with the supertonics and everything else that I did, one of my children has developed a cold or an infection that wasn't responding to my my alternative cares, so we had to take him in and get some other opinions today, and I'm really glad that we did, and nothing really scary going on, but it brought up the topic of what is the difference between a virus and a bacteria, and what are the treatment approaches between the two. So let's go ahead and get started on that, and then we'll take a break and get into it in more detail. So what are the differences? I mean, you hear that people have a virus. The common cold is a virus. It's called a rhabdovirus. It's a virus on its structure is actually a non-cellular entity. What that means is it doesn't have a membrane. It doesn't have any kind of other bodies inside it. Like all the cells of your body have a nucleus and they have different organelles inside them to help the cells do what they need to do to help keep your overall cell population happy and healthy. Well, a virus does not have even a membrane, or it's like a balloon. All the cells in your body have this skin around the outside. Well, a virus doesn't have that skin around the outside. It's just a straight protein. When a person has a virus, the virus, if you want to look at it, you know, you can Google this stuff and look it up, but you have a hexagon folded up protein that floats around. And when it comes in contact with a cell, it actually injects a protein strand out into the surface of the cell and starts and shoots its DNA nucleus into the cell, which migrates into the nucleus of your cell and then reinstructs your nuclei to, instead of making proteins to reproduce its own cell, your machine or the manufacturing center of your cell that used to make stuff for your cell now starts reproducing this virus because it's got a new set of instructions injected into it. And if you look at a virus at the strands, it's a hexagon. It has six sides and a tail. It looks like a little alien running around. It's got like little spider legs that hook onto the outside of the cell and an ejector base plate that injects its proteins into the cells. And then your cell will go crazy reproducing or making more of these viruses until it fills up so full of these viruses that it literally explodes. It pumps out uses all your amino acids and all your nutrition to make more viruses, and then the cell will self-destruct and explode. And when that happens, millions of new viruses are released into your body, all pre-designed with these little injector mechanisms to go out and find a new cell and inject its protein or its DNA into your cell and turn your cell into a manufacturing site for more viruses. The interesting thing about this is, the virus doesn't do any of its own work. It's just like a software program. You put the software into your computer, and then the computer does all the work that makes the monitor work, makes everything happen. But the virus didn't have to do any work itself. It's very sleek in that when it's not inside your cell, it has no membranes. It has no way of being attacked. It has a protein complex that makes it very durable. They call it, it's between life and non-life. It doesn't really have any kind of the features of life, yet it reproduces by injecting these proteins into living cells and then letting the nuclei of the living cells do all of its reproduction for it. So it's a very persistent, insistent kind of thing, very difficult to treat from a doctor's perspective. Some of the things, the symptoms that will show up when a person has a virus, more than one part of the body is affected. You get sore throats, runny nose, headaches, hoarseness, cough, cold symptoms, sneezing, fever, muscle aches, nausea, vomiting, diarrhea. You won't have all those at once, but you're going to have more than one of those things going on at the same time as a hallmark that it's a virus bothering you, not a bacteria. When you have a bacteria affecting your body, it's going to be a sore throat. It's going to be an earache. It's going to be like a dysentery is a bacteria, or actually that's more of a parasite, but you'll have a diarrhea and nothing else. So if you have a more definable single problem, it's more likely to have a bacteria influence versus a virus. And if you have general aches and pains that kind of meander throughout the body, it's going to be a virus. And the reason for this is when a virus affects you, what it does is it binds its proteins onto the proteins of your DNA. So you're literally mutating. It's changing the information centers of the DNA of every cell in your body. So as you go through this this DNA mutation and your cells are dividing, you're going to get symptoms throughout the body as it processes through the different cell membranes of the body. Where a bacteria is a living organism in and of itself, it has its own cell bodies, its own job to do. It will consume off of you, but actually live in its own colony. So your symptoms will be much more precise because you're dealing with a colony of bacteria versus a invasion of alien viruses that are attacking and infiltrating your own cells. So we'll cut it off there for our first break. This is Dr. Drumright, Harmony Health Hour. Hope you guys are all doing well and digging out of the snow at jackaloperadio.com. We'll see you in a couple minutes. Talking about viruses versus bacteria. I know at this time of the year, we're all running low on vitamin D around here. The sun has, although it's out, it's like 0 degrees outside. So when you get out and get in the sun, you get your face and that maybe the back of your hands. That's really not enough to get the exposure you need. It's best to get the whole body exposure 5 to 10 minutes a day of sun. And I tell you what, around here, that's very hard to do this time of year. So we're getting a lot of snow shoveling and a lot of colds and flus and sniffles. And I tell you, cabin fever is starting to kick in, too. I saw a lot of grumpy people in the office today, and it's not really their fault. It's the lack of sun and lack of outdoor activity and just in general cooped up with your family with these blizzards running around. It's really hard on everybody. So we were talking about viruses are not cells. They cannot reproduce on their own. They cannot live on their own. They float around in between spaces and then get a contact with a proper host, inject their proteins into your DNA, hijack your manufacturing of proteins, and you start producing more of them, and they continue to explode and reproduce around the body. So, and where bacteria are living organisms with their own cell membrane, they live in their own colonies, they like the human body temperature. And one thing that's an interesting trivia is why your body gets a fever and why you don't get the same bacteria infections as your dog does. See, your dog has a basic temperature of 101 degrees. That's his basic temperature, and yours is 98.6 degrees. That few couple degrees temperature makes a big difference to a single-cell organism. The single-cell organism runs on enzymes, just like you do, and the enzymes are temperature and pH sensitive. So the bacteria that like you and the viruses that like you because of your temperature and because of your pH factor that your body also likes. So they're like they attract to similar hosts. So when your body gets an infection or proteins, because see, both the virus and the bacteria are made out of proteins. So when one of these organisms start invading the body, one of your body's natural defenses is a fever. The fever will jump up to 101 to 103 degrees as it attempts to cook, literally, cook the foreign proteins. This is a very healthy, good thing. I think we've talked about this in the past, that when your child or you get a fever, you want to monitor the fever and make sure it doesn't spike over 105. But if you can keep it around 101 to 103, that's a very healthy situation. Your body's taking some damage, but you've got over 2 trillion cells. The invading protein, virus, or bacteria will cook off because the enzymes that keep it alive can't survive at the higher temperature, and you're very rapidly going to find a recovery and a restoration of normal health by allowing a fever to run. Okay? So a couple other signs to tell the difference between a bacteria and a virus. Let's see, signs of these multiple symptoms for a few days, but then suddenly get, okay, here's the deal. Many times in the wintertime, especially, you can start off with a viral infection where you have aches and pains and coughs and different things going on, and you're just kind of getting by. And then one day you think you're getting better, and then the next day it's like whammo, you're just totally knocked for a loop and you feel 10 times worse. What's very likely happens in these kind of situations is you started off with the virus, but then because of the weakened immune system, some bacteria is now set up shop, like strep or something like that. You see, strep is a dangerous bacteria, but ultimately it's a common bacteria. It lives in your sinuses and in your head most of the time. But when you have a viral infection that knocks your immune system down, sometimes the immune system now can't keep the strep bacterium in check, and it'll grow out of control. And now you've got a serious problem where your immune system's already depleted from the viral attack, and now you've got a bacteria that's taking advantage of that and is growing out of control and creating a much worse condition. So if you have a problem for a couple days and then it goes away, it's probably a virus. Bacteria can last a little bit longer, but if it starts off, it goes away, and then comes back, you've kind of converted over from a viral infection to more likely a bacterial infection. Okay, so the bacteria is a cell, the virus is not. They multiply in different ways. They're very different organisms. How do we get rid of these things? So to get rid of a bacteria, the primary use, of course, you've all heard of this, is antibiotics. So how does an antibiotic work? Why does that kill a bacteria? Well, antibiotics are very unique and actually an excellent class of drugs because they depend on what makes bacteria different from you. See, your cells have nuclei in each one of them. The bacteria cell does not have a nuclei. It has various proteins that make up the membranes, but no nuclei at the center. And because of the different proteins on the membranes, an antibiotic will target the synthesis of the membrane proteins, the skin of the balloon, if you will, and literally pop bacteria cells and explode and kill them on contact, but doesn't bother your human cells at all. So there's no danger or damage to your human cells when you take an antibiotic. But all bacteria, including good guy bacteria, Acidophilus, and other things that are important part of your body, are all killed off when you take that antibiotic. Antibiotics do not work on viruses, okay? Viruses do not have a cell membrane, and antibiotics work on the cell membrane, so they have absolutely no benefit to taking an antibiotic if you have a viral problem. So this is very important. So some of the presentations that show up differently. So you have a runny nose. If the mucus coming out of your nose is clear or yellow, it's a virus. And these are rules of thumb, okay? This is common knowledge, like Lao Tzu talked about, common knowledge for common sense. I mean, I'm not telling you how to treat anything. I'm trying to give you information out there so that you can have better understanding of what's going on inside your body and your children's body. So if the mucus coming out of the nose is clear and runny, it's very likely a virus. You give them rest and feed them if they're hungry. Otherwise, lots of fluids and rest and just kind of let it work itself out. There are no provable chemicals that kill viruses or reduce the symptoms of a virus. The reason is when a virus gets into your body, like I said earlier, it's mutating your DNA and you're going through a cell mutation. It's not like an organism that you can kill and get rid of. You just literally have to go through the adaptation process and process through the virus before your symptoms will subside. The symptoms of a virus aren't actually caused by the virus. They're caused by the changes in the DNA in your natural cell display. And when those changes occur, your sensors see a variation and show symptoms to your consciousness, so you can tell that something's going on. So when when you have a virus, you just gotta kind of live through it. When you have a bacteria infection, it's going to be more specific, and there are some medications called antibiotics that you can take for these. Now, if anybody takes an antibiotic, I'm sorry, let's get back on track here. So if you have a runny nose or your cough and something like that, and you're coughing up a green, mucusy, sticky kind of stuff, that's a good sign that you do have a bacterial problem. So whether it's coughing up or it's coming out your nose, one or the other, if it's sticky and green, then you've got something, bacterium, growing in there. Now, if you have it's brown, then very likely what you've got is a fungus. There's other types of things that can grow in your body, and these are called funguses or yeasts. Now, the fungus and yeast is an actual plant, and they have a whole different category of ways to treat fungus and yeast problems, and they're very difficult to get rid of. But most importantly is if you can determine it's a fungus problem, an antibiotic will not work and will actually make the problem worse, because your body is covered on the inside and out with bacterium that are supposed to be there. And when the fungus begins to grow, it's displanting or replacing some of the bacteria that's supposed to be there. And then you go and mistakenly take an antibiotic, which kills bacteria. It didn't kill the infecting organism. It actually killed your good guy protecting organisms. It's like shooting your own troops. You know, they're out there on the border protecting you, and you go wipe all the troops out and let the bad guys come in further. So a lot of what I'm getting at in this show is we want to be very careful with the use of antibiotics. Used properly, they're a very powerful medicine that save lives. But used improperly, they actually can make the problem a lot worse, because they get the bacteria that's supposed to be there protecting you out of the way, so the virus and the fungus and the yeast can grow even more radical and take over more of your body. So viruses are parasites. They can only reproduce inside the hosts, where bacteria can live outside your body. A virus on the outside of your body will degenerate very quickly. You don't have to worry about, except for direct misting or contact, is not very likely for virus spread, although bacteria can live outside the body, so they're more likely to spread via touching, light switches, handshakes, and stuff like that. Let's see. Generally, when a person has a virus, yeah, we're all good to go there. So I think that's the end of that topic. I would love one of these days when we have a call-in question, so if you could tell me if I didn't explain that right. I know I try to take very complicated topics and boil them down into understandable situations. But just understand that if you have a cold or a flu or anything like that, the best thing to do is just get some rest, drink plenty of fluids. The Super Tonic is a recipe you can get at harmonyhealth.com. It's a homemade recipe of garlic, horseradish, ginger, cayenne pepper, what's the last ingredient? Onion, blended in a vodka base to extract the herbal essences, and then mixed with vinegar for further extraction and pH balancing. If you don't like alcohol, you can flash off the alcohol after it's prepared. But it's very effective at boosting the immune system in the lungs, in the sinuses, in the intestines, and throughout the body. So stay safe, stay clean out there. It's definitely a rough winter, and you can tell in my voice that I'm kind of dealing with one of these things myself. It's been bothering me for a while now, so I'm very confident that I have actually a bacteria, so it's not going to be contagious so much. And I may have to follow my doctor or my child to the doctor and get me an antibiotic. Let's change the topic around a little bit here now. So we got a couple other things we want to talk about to stay within the healthcare field. A federal judge in Florida recently ruled Obamacare unconstitutional. Did you guys hear that? So now we've got a federally stationed judge that steps up and says, I've got it on my blog, there's a very long definition of why this judge states that it is unconstitutional. Very interesting is what's going on out there is that the Obama administration and the guys that are pushing this health care are just ignoring this. They're going to go on through and mandate or try to force the implementation of this program, even though it's been declared unconstitutional. Now what is up with that? I mean, I thought in a land with the Constitution that the court system's job was to determine whether a new law was constitutional or not. And as the balance of power, if they decide it's not constitutional, then it cannot be implemented or imposed. Yet we have an executive department administration here who's just flat ignoring the judicial department and saying that we don't care what you say, we've rammed this through and we're going to proceed with this and we're going to continue to process this regardless of what these appointed judges saying. I mean, this is anarchy, friends. This is crazy. This is some of the most insane displays of unconstitutional governance that I've ever seen in my life, and I don't know where it's going from there. One thing for sure is that using the force of law to have somebody else buy something they don't want to buy is completely un-American and unconstitutional from my point, and I will definitely stand on that premise till the day I die. And we'll keep you informed of that as it moves along. So, boy, oh boy, oh boy, what a busy week we've had with the snow shoveling and everything going on. On the virus situation, if you go to my website, one of the things that I've been researching a lot lately is clean air. I've always been a proponent of clean water, clean food. You hear me talk about that a lot, but somebody hit me the other day that, how long can you live without food? Well, you can live for months without food. How long can you live without water? You can live about 5 days without water. Well, how long can you live without air? Well, they say you can live without air for about 5 minutes. So 5 minutes with air versus 5 days with water and several months with food, it kind of gives you a priority sequence here, which is the most important for your survival, and it would be clean air. So from that branch, I have become a distributor, and I'm promoting this company called Green Tech, and you're going to be hearing more about this in the near future. We're going to have one of their experts on the radio show, and we're going to talk about ways of cleaning up your air in your car, in your house, and everywhere else. But one of the products that we're going to soon have on the shelf here is called the Mini Mate. It is a wear around your neck air purifier that you literally hang around your shoulder. So if you're in enclosed spaces or anything else, this is actually producing an ozone or a biological neutralizer into the air right in your local space so that you can protect yourself. Like if you're on flights or you're in enclosed spaces or somebody else is around you has a cold, you strap this thing around your neck and you have this basically this little bubble of fresh air that you can live within. So if you're interested, it's called the Mini Mate. You can call us at Harmony Health, 816-436-9355. The suggested retail is $149 on these things, but we can probably get it to you, $120, something like that. Just tell them you heard about it on the Jackalope Radio. I'll give you $30 off just for saying you heard it on the radio show. We can have these out to you. They're about 3 inches by 2 inches by half an inch, so it's very convenient, about the size of a cell phone. Hangs around your neck, battery operated, cleans up the air. I've had one for years. I used one on my trip to China back in 1998. Clean air, clean water, clean food. Todd was telling me the other day that our water purifier here in the office is absolutely fabulous. You know, you put water through a 4-stage filter system and man, you can tell the difference. I'm ready for a break, Todd. You ready to go ahead and hit the break now? This is Dr. Drumright, Harmony Health Hour. We're trucking through this, man. It's Friday night. You got a lineup going strong tonight with the, I'll see you in a minute. This is Dr. Drumright, Harmony Health Hour, jackaloperadio.com.
Rise up to the brightness. Attention all personnel. You got it.
You got it.
You found the most listened to radio station. Jackalope Radio.
Hey guys, it's Dr. Drumright's Friday night, Harmony Health Hour. So we're going to change the topic around a little bit tonight, and some exciting information came out of NASA today. I don't know if any of you guys heard this. Todd, you heard about this? They've got the Kepler, the telescope working now.
Oh, awesome.
And they've just reported yesterday that they found 54 new planets that are within the habitable zone. They're looking at this one small area of space, and they found over 2,000 planets, but 54 of these planets are within the Cinderella Zone. What they mean by Cinderella Zone is the area away from their star where water can exist in liquid form. Since everything we know about life is a water-based activity, we're looking out into deep space to find other planets that actually may have water on them. And they just released this fact that 54 new planets discovered are within the Cinderella Zone, and 5 of these new planets are the same size as Earth.
That's awesome.
So you got 5 planets, just in a little tiny speck. They said 1/4 of 1 degree of space they're looking at. It's come up with 5 planets that are like Earth in the Cinderella Zone with water on them. So what are the chances with the millions and millions of other stars around there that there's water-based life, water-based stuff? I mean, this is exciting stuff. I mean, it's kind of, I didn't find it except through some of my Facebook friends and browsing through the web stuff, but you don't see it on the news. But I mean, this is huge. I mean, you got planets in our local time space within our own galaxy that are clearly in the zone to have water on them, which is what we've always been looking for. So now we've got indications of Earth-sized planets in the same Cinderella Zone that very likely have water on them, and therefore very likely have developed life at various stages of the evolutionary scale. Some advanced, some not advanced. I mean, what is going on here? This is leading us to the understanding that we're not alone out here. You know, that there are other.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, this is the thing I love about exploring, and that's why whenever, you know, Obama came in and said he was cutting the space program, I went, "What? Why the hell would you cut the space program? That's so important to our existence overall." I mean, it's really, the more we learn about what's out there, the more we can apply it to what we know about ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, and you combine that with, I don't know if you saw this, it was big all over the Israeli news, but did you see, let's say last Saturday, the video of the UFO over the Maas, or what do they call it over there, where everybody, the Temple Mount? Did you see that video?
I did not.
No, there's a video, a raw video clip of a glowing orb that was hovering over Jerusalem, and it descends down to just over the Temple Mount, just off the ground, and then you see a flash on the ground, and it disappears. I mean, it just like streaks up into the sky at ultimate speeds. And this was just a few days ago. And, you know, it brings to mind the possibility that there are not only just other life out there on other planets, but there's intelligent life on these other planets, and they are in direct contact with us at various methods. Without, you know, of course, you and me and the lay people out here, we don't get access to any kind of that information unless we have been abducted or having some kind of problems directly with them. Todd, you ever had anybody on here that's been abducted or had any kind of?
Oh yeah, yeah. On Night Watch, we have that a lot. I've had a lot of people talk about abductions and different things. And the thing is, you know, different parts of the world, people who don't even talk to each other, it blows my mind because they really know things and they're so similar. You know, there's so many similarities. And this was even back before the internet. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of these guys. Mm-hmm. And it just blows your mind. And plus, you know, I've got people on the show who send me proof. I mean, they've sent me x-rays of metal objects in their body that they have no idea what they are or how they got there. These
wow.
Weird things. Yeah, I tell you what, I can take you down the rabbit hole on that.
Yeah, yeah, nice. So what do you think about that? Let's kind of just shoot some crazy stuff out there. Why is Egypt where all this revolution is going on? You know, what happened there? You had a regime that was in place for 30 years, and now all of a sudden it's just totally upside down and flipped around. What kind of influence, what influenced these people to pick January 25th all of a sudden with all their hearts and their souls to want to be free and to march on the streets and maintain the streets through horrendous oppression and hold there? I mean, what if it's a return of the ancient Egyptian gods? I mean, I don't hear anybody talking about that.
I know, yeah.
You hear all these people talk, well, the Muslims and the Christians, like, you know what? These are Egyptians. They're not Muslims. They're Egyptians. I mean, the Egyptians had a culture way before the Muslims or the Christians or anybody else had any kind of influence whatsoever. So the Ra and the Horus and all the Egyptian gods that they talk about that built the pyramids, who knows back when, what's to say that we're not witnessing the return of these Egyptian gods? You're seeing aliens over the Temple Mount. You're seeing a complete upheaval of the social political climate in the country where the pyramids are. I mean, I know that sounds bizarre, but I talk about conversations and people get all in it. They egotistically say, "Oh, this is it," or "We've got this," or "We think this," and nobody's talking about the Egyptian culture itself. You know, the connection to the stars and the connection to the aliens and stuff that the Egyptian culture has, and that maybe they are the select people, and that the, what do they call them, Akhenazi? What do they call their?
Well, I know that in the Bible, if you go back to even the Bible as a source, it talks. It kind of predicts this. It's, that's the thing that, you know, a lot of. You know how I feel about the crazy banging your in your head Baptist guys, but
you know
they're really milking this for all it's worth right now because they're saying, "Oh, we told you it was coming. It's the end of times." That doesn't necessarily mean it's the end of times. People have forgotten that the Bible is written in a weird timeline, but it does say that this is going to happen. And it is weird how when you look at the fact that the Egyptians had all these connections, like you say, to the stars, the chariots of the gods, and things of that nature.
Right.
It really takes a new perspective as to what's going on over there, and people really need to step back and take a look at this and say, hold on, there's something really different.
And then you throw that in at the same time, the Kepler Observatory is bringing back this knowledge or this information that there is water-based planets out there locally. They're not far away. And there is obviously an opportunity for life to exist. I mean, what's to say that this isn't kind of wrapping us all up into, we know the human mind works on incrementals. That if you take a human being and shove them clear over the cliff, they're going to freak out. But if you ease them down the cliff surface or ease them into the rabbit hole slowly, one little increment at a time, then they will adapt to it just like the cell population adapts. They adapt to it and then you can go a little further and a little further. They were on this final countdown towards the 2012 experience. And some of my friends out there were talking about this is the ultimate coming out of ET. You know, that there's going to be a situation come up to where they're just going to come out and just cross the globe and said, okay, yeah, we're here, you know, and all you tyrants and all you people that think you're in charge, I love that Rush song. We have assumed control. Attention, all planets of the Solar Federation. We have assumed control.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is also you have to look at it from the perspective of, you know, we have long since, most of us with, you know, the ability to think for ourselves, I should say, have long since given up the idea that we're the only things in the universe. I find that very narrow-minded, egotistical, and just plain dumb to think, oh, universe upon universe upon universe upon galaxy, and we're it.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, exactly.
Why? Because they didn't do so good the first time.
Well, I mean, Lao Tzu talks about this, you know, 2,600 years ago, he talks about, you know, that the multiverse and the fact that, did you see, I was reading some more stuff on the quantum physics of the multiverses, and they're using this Acceleron collider to, one of the things they're going to do with it is when they impact these molecules, these protons in our universe, that they're expecting that when they count the energy released from the impact, there's going to be missing particles or missing stuff. And if they can prove that what's left over after the impact has less than what started off with, then the next question is, well, where did it go? And the premise is where it goes is into these parallel universes that are phased in, phased out, just slightly off center of our time-space continuum. And we can actually interact with them and move in and out. And they call it, the ancients talk about this. this brings us back to the Native American ancients. You know, they talk about the Manitaka. If you want to do some time Google searching and look in some good people, go to manitaka.org, M-A-N-A-T-A-K-A. It's an American Indian organization based out of Arkansas who claim that there is an ancient crystal cavern in the center of Arkansas that the aliens or that our predecessors used for time for space travel. That it would actually, you would go into this capsule and it would like a wormhole or what do you call it, a stargate. This was an implanted stargate into the subsurface of Arkansas, and it's a giant quartz crystal that's used for interplanetary travel. And this is common knowledge among the Indian elders and stuff. I mean, they don't talk about that to the white people because, you know.
Well, yeah, they've already had enough problems with that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So I hit it with somebody today. It was very interesting. It's like, so now that we know there's other planets out there with water, maybe Jesus was an ambassador. You know, that, yeah, he was much more than anybody here on earth, and he was trying to tell us something, but maybe he wasn't, you know, just the son of the God, and we were the center of the planet of the whole universe, like you just said. He was an ambassador from a higher organization coming to us to try to get us to straighten up and say, love your neighbors and love your brothers. Nothing he ever said, it was when I read the New Testament, he doesn't say anything about anything except love each other, you know, and get rid of the banks. I like that. Oh boy. So we rambled around a little bit here tonight, guys. I appreciate the time that you spent with me. This is Dr. Drummer at Harmony Health. I think about you guys in Australia all the time and all you guys on the East Coast with 4 feet of snow in Boston. I mean, I hope the heck this isn't the beginning of the next ice age, even though some of the numbers may indicate it. We've had 14,000 years of good weather. Here comes 100,000 years of ice age, baby. I'll see you all later. I'll catch you next week. This is Dr. Drumright on JackalopeRadio.com. There's an old Virginian vibraphone with a calculated gait and a man who thinks he's Al Capone with the Cummerbundan cape. Don't criticize what a vicar would prize in you. And talk to the man if you feel he needs talking to. And the hobbit on the rocks is crying. And the fish upon the docks are dying, yeah. And the hobbit on the rocks is crying. There's an orchestra in Rococo and an insulated dwarf, and the ships are sinking in the sea as they sail from the shore. What a vicar would prize in you. And the hobbit on the rocks is crying. And the fish upon the docks are dying, yeah. Oh, and the hobbit on the rocks is crying.
The best and biggest music variety.
Biggest music variety.
Jackalope Radio.